Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we hear from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're checking in at the UBS European Conference here in London, an annual gathering of dozens of European CEOs, investors and thought leaders that features panel discussions, plenty of lively debate and a full programme of small group meetings, bilaterals and networking opportunities. It's our third annual visit to the conference, and for this week's edition, our focus falls on a panel in which a number of UBS opinion leaders, who also happen to be friends of this programme, zeroed in on the topic of normalising global monetary policy. In the programme, we'll hear from two of those panellists and ask them to unpack the panel discussion and explain how investors should best position to profit from challenges to the prevailing economic orthodoxy. We start with Yannis Kontopoulos, Global Head of Macro Strategy in UBS Investment Bank. Yannis, we're talking about normalising global monetary policy today. In the panel, you talked about two primary components to this. Can you tell us about that?
The normalisation, basically, of monetary policy is effectively a special one in this cycle because it's originating from two components. The first one is from the presence of the unorthodox policies, which is the balance sheets of central banks. So those are presumably set to be unwound in the course over the course of the next few years, and the U.S. has already started that process. And in parallel to that, what you have is the more standard way of looking at the normalization of policy, which is to move away from very, very low interest rates and start raising and engaging in some sort of a hiking cycle. So those are the two components that I think are different from the usual cycles we've observed in the past. And what has that implied is that central bankers in general, because they've never experienced some sort of normalization of the sort, they've been very, very careful on how they engage in those processes, both in terms of having a number of hiking cycles on a stop-and-go type of pattern, as opposed to the more typical, you know, once every month or once every other month hike that we were used to in, you know, 10, 20, and 30 years ago. And also being very, very gentle in terms of how quickly they unwind the balance sheet, in terms of how quickly they let, I guess, either they buy back the securities, actually they let the securities that they bought from the market expire, and they try to do that in as passive a fashion as possible, meaning that they don't actively sell it into the market, but once they start unwinding, they just unwind with the passage of time. So all of this is implying essentially a very, very gentle pattern. The U.S. has started on this. Maybe the unknown now for the markets as we look in 2019 is when the Europeans and the Japanese joining in that type of more unorthodox unwinding of and normalization of policy.
Yannis Kontopoulos, something else that was discussed on the panel, which and you had an insight on, which I thought was really striking, was this idea of a change in the ways of communication, particularly of the US Central Bank. And this wasn't so much about the big process, it was a communications question. Could you sort of talk us through that again? Because it was a really interesting facet of the panel, I thought.
So the I guess once you go into, you know, areas that you've never been before in terms of monetary policy, and you start pushing yourself for different options, what central bankers had to come up with is more imaginative types of policy initiatives. And indeed, part of those policy initiatives is a communication about what they're going to be doing in the future, depending on different scenarios. This is what basically they've coined as forward guidance. So they will come out at certain points in time and basically claim that they will or will not do something for either a particular period, a set period of time ahead, or until certain things happen, which is an attempt to basically tie their hands behind their back, but also give assurances to the market that they can think of policy not just in present terms, but also in some sort of a future path that they can discount. And as they do that, that would affect their choices today. So it's trying to get something for nothing. But it has worked, and it has actually served very well both the U.S., which appears to be kind of the intellectual father and mother of this type of policy, and a number of other central banks that I followed in their footsteps, including the ECB and also, the BOJ, and to some extent Bank of England. So what happened now, what has been interesting in 2018 is with the new leadership at the Fed, is that we've observed probably an unannounced and an anticipated distance from this type of policy, to the extent that they've almost appear to have completely discounted that type of initiative, and they focused on almost the other extreme, which is what I pointed out in our presentation and discussion that we had yesterday, which was that ultimately, if you focus too much on, instead of, if you're not as nuanced as you used to be in the past, and kind of present several opportunities depending on what hits you into the future, but you're just saying, well, things are pretty good today, and as such, I'm going to keep hiking rates. That's an easy to communicate policy, but also it might be a fairly abrupt and dangerous way of trying to normalize policy. And the reason that this might be the case is that obviously the market is not at a stage of the world that they feel that we are certainly back into normal. And also because as part of the communication in the past, they used to say that we have several interesting models by which we figure out what a neutral rate is or where things would be if everything was in equilibrium. And now it appears that the Fed is saying, not only I'm going to keep hiking us since the situation is good right now, but I don't really know what the neutral rate is, so I don't know when I'm stopping. So if you think about it, if you put those two together, the communication now is one that basically says, beware market, I'm going to hit the wall, and then I'm going to stop. So that's the problem of not having a more nuanced communication at this stage, and what I think envelops the current, or part of what has affected the current risk off right now.
Mark Haefeli is Global Chief Investment Officer of UBS Wealth Management. Mark, on this question of normalizing monetary policy, it is rather an expansive question, but what do our listeners need to know about the status, if you like, of the process?
Well, I think the most important thing is that the United States is furthest along in this process. And that means the Federal Reserve has the most influence over the path going forward.
And I wanted to ask Mark about something that was discussed on the panel in sort of broad terms. And that was the idea that this is maybe part of a, if not a sort of regime change, but a really pronounced shift. And there were some interesting features. I know that Arend Kaptan talked about this research that he and his team had looked at 40 years of data from 40 countries, many recessions, over 100. And that the current data sort of didn't stack up with anything that had been seen before. Are we in a sort of, I don't know, is it a seismic shift? How would you characterize it?
Well, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Mr. Powell, said that he is navigating by the stars. And I don't think that many recent Fed presidents have put it quite that way. So I would say there is something of a regime change. I think that as the Fed has started to tighten, it's strengthened the dollar, it's pulled liquidity out of the overall system, and that has made some market participants nervous about where we go from here, even though we see things like very strong consumer demand. We have not seen the U.S. Housing prices roll over, and so people are trying to move between these two different pictures that they see and try to navigate.
Yanis Kontopoulos, there was plenty of discussion around challenges to economic orthodoxy, if not a regime change, certainly a shift. Can you tell us a bit about where we are at the moment? I know that lots of the discussion was about where in the cycle we were at, but in terms of these sort of systemic changes, are we sort of at a kind of a crossroads or a turning point? Is that slightly melodramatic reading?
No, it's not, because I think this is effectively the test right now. The test is whether we can, at some point, say that we are back to normal. And the answer is, because I think policymakers and market participants don't really know, what they end up doing is they end up biasing themselves in as smooth and as gradual a process as possible. And I think that's a limitation. It's going to take time. And it's part of the feature on why When you think about cycles, they appear to be much more elongated, the phases of the cycles, than they were in the past, is that things are moving very, very, very slowly. Not only macro variables, not only inflation, not only growth, but also policy making, because you're not quite sure. We don't know. We're only going to find out exposed, and you don't want to be the person who caused, the revelation that, yes, we're not yet normal. So it's not apocalyptic, quite apocalyptic, but it is something that favors conservatism.
Back to you, Mark Haefeli. Mark, it's always good to talk about the meaning of these sorts of issues for investors, portfolio construction and so on. On the panel this week, you made some interesting points about U.S. fixed incomes as insurance, for example. Tell us more.
Sure. So I think over the past few years, we said it was a TINA market. There is no alternative to stocks. And now we've moved to a TIERA market where there is a real alternative. And for us, that is the U.S. 10-year, where we think that most of the rise in the yields there have taken place, and that can be a stabilizer for portfolios going forward.
Mark, another thing I thought was interesting, I think it was your chairman in UBS asked you about your sort of stewardship in particular of the sort of ultra high net worth clients of the bank, obviously, who you spend a lot of time talking to, how they're positioning through the kinds of shifts you've been talking about. And there were some interesting reflections on the prominence of alternatives and also on sustainability themes. And I wondered if you could explain to us why those issues resonate so much, particularly with that client demographic.
Well, I think that the ultra clients have a real global perspective, and they recognize that we have something of a regime shift. We have very different monetary policies and fiscal policies being pursued around the world, and they want to try and invest in a diversified way globally. They also are concerned with both that bond yields still are low, that traditional assets are overvalued, and they want to reach deeper into some of the more early stage companies, and they've increased their private investments. So many of them talk about having half their portfolios in private markets, which is a real shift. And then the second thing is we have seen a real increase in sustainable investing. The family offices, almost half of them are really looking at this. In Asia, investors that we surveyed, 60% of them already have sustainable investments in their portfolio, and 58% of investors globally think that in the next 10 years, all of investments, it will be the norm to invest sustainably.
Just finally, there was a playful discussion in the panel about sterling, of course, and the panel was taking place here in London, and looking at the pound maybe, 12 months hence, once you and your colleagues return for the next iteration of the European Conference, for example. We've had a yet more turbulent couple of days politically since. It's still kind of unfolding. Some reflections from you on that. I guess the advisory, certainly in terms of sterling, would be what, just sort of steer well clear for now. And is there any kind of sense emerging from the mayhem we've seen in the last couple of days to your eyes?
Well, I think that one of the things listeners should realize is that for global investors, it is extremely difficult to bet on what the cabinet will do or 320 ministers may do, and therefore they want to try and shield themselves from this volatility and not invest in the UK in many cases. So that, I think that's unfortunate. My own view is that there will be further back and forth where, ultimately, if this deal is accepted, which is, I think, the base case, there's going to be perhaps the Parliament rejecting and the EU saying that they're not going to get a better deal, and then perhaps some ministers or some MPs stepping forward to say that, well, fine, we'll vote for it for the good of the country if it's our best alternative. I don't really have a prediction other than that we're far from the end of this and this being a done deal.
And that's Mark Haefeli bringing us to the end of this 215th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at the website monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.